Inside Thatcher's last election. The year is 1987, having made history by becoming the UK's first female prime minister and then driving out the most left-wing manifesto the country's ever seen, Margaret Thatcher faced a climatic third election campaign. It's the subject of a fascinating diary, an account of what actually happened inside the Thatcher government and the campaign. It's by Lord David Young. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the UK. Lord Young himself, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you. Good morning.
Good to have you with us. If you like, set the scene. It's 1987. Those of us with long memories may remember the 80s fondly. But what was the atmosphere like inside Number 10 going into that third election campaign?
Well, it wasn't only the inside atmosphere. We'd gone through a terrible decade of the 70s with strikes, high taxation, high trade union involvement in everything. And when Thatcher won the first election in 79, we started to make a breakthrough. She won the second election and we could see new businesses starting. We'd brought taxes down. We got rid of the strikes. And yet, the election, which Neil Kinnock for Labour was running against us, promised to restore everything to the way it was. So tension was extremely high. Secondly, we'd already won two elections in a row. I think people were getting tired. But the reason why I kept a diary was simply this, that I was not a politician. I was originally a lawyer, an entrepreneur, and I got so depressed the way things were going in the 70s that I volunteered my services to government as an advisor. And then I became chairman of the Manpower Services, and then I was in the cabinet. And then suddenly, in April 87, she asked me to take a hand in running an election. Now, I'd never asked anybody to vote. I'd never knocked on a front door. I'd never even been in a political meeting. And so I decided I would keep a diary for the one and only time in my life. And the book is really 33 years later, I decided to publish it. The story of those few weeks.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, if you remember back to 1987, Neil Kinnock and the Labour Party seemed to be on a roll. And a lot of people were saying, well, you know, here is the man after years of the Michael Foots and et cetera, that Labour could take control of the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, remember, this was before social media. It was even almost before television. There were just two channels in those days. Sky hadn't come along. So what appeared on television was really important. And Neil Kinnock had the very best of the media people working for him. And, you know, we were probably looking a bit tired. So it became a bit desperate. And like anything else, if you get overhead up, you go to extremes. And we were really pushing ourselves.
So what was the strategy then? And what did you... Because, I mean, obviously, this is 1987, only 5 years previously, of course. Margaret Thatcher had been at the helm as Britain was victorious in the Falklands conflict. We'd been through the miners' strike, of course, in 1984 as well. So what was, Margaret Thatcher had done the best part of dismantling the unions. So what was the strategy then? I mean... We would see that also, obviously, this was the age of, if you like, you know, Thatcherism by its very nature, you know, people being pushed to and you've described yourself as an entrepreneur, you know, to begin with. I mean, people were buying their own council houses, were starting up their own businesses. The city was at that point in full flow.
Yes. I mean, we just had the Big Bang. So that was transforming everything. And we just had this fear that if we lost this election, it would go right back to where we were, and that would be the end. So I don't think, in truth, that there was much chance we'd lose the election, but we thought there was. And so what the book shows, really what it's like inside a campaign with all the stresses and everything else. And when you read it, I realize over those weeks, I probably had a lot too much champagne that was good for me, and certainly nowhere near enough sleep to keep going. And the tension was there. And I just think it gives also a face-to-face account of Margaret Thatcher, how she really was.
Because this is the thing. I mean, you know, Margaret Thatcher perhaps has become a caricature. I mean, she was lampooned anyway in the spitting image, etc. But I mean, there were always these, you know, these names, the Iron Lady, etc. And it wasn't until she actually, you know, that famous picture of her leaving Number 10 in tears in 1990 after she was overthrown that we, you know, we realised there was a human side to those who may have, to those who vilified her.
Yes, well, what the book showed, I mean, I was very close to her. I used to have a regular slot with her every single week because I was no threat. I was in the Lords. I could never become Prime Minister. I was really there as long as she wanted me to be there. So I was trusted. But by that time, she'd been in power 8 years. She'd been leader of the party then 13 years. It's a great strain. And she was getting tired. And she was a woman who I think slept little more than 2 or 3 hours a week. When I was Secretary of State for Employment, I'd go and see her. And I always got the feeling, and even afterwards when I was at DGI, she actually knew more about my department than I did. And she was more aware of what was going on. She worked all hours of the day and night. Round about this time, she was obviously tired. She wasn't well. She had a bad toothache. And she was human. And I was doing my level best just to give her the confidence to go through the final week of the campaign.
And I mean, did she have confidence? I mean, I know that Dennis, her husband, was her rock, and very much, you know, he also was lampooned, but he was very much, you know, the guiding, if you like, something she could attach herself to. But, you know, we tend to think of, because of what happened 3 years later, as there being a lot of infighting. But were there, I mean, presumably, who were the main players at this point?
Well, in the Conservatives, of course, Norman Tebbit, who's a great guy, Norman I worked for in my early years in the government, and he was chairman of the party. He was running the election, and he had a great gift. He could say in a short phrase, "Get on your bike," which really sort of encapsulates the thought of that time in the early 80s. That if you haven't got a job, go out and find one. And he really was the heart of the election, under her, of course. But Norman was not, perhaps had run things. I'd run things in my life. I'd run businesses, all sorts of things. So I was there as the organizer. And my job was to make sure everything worked. And I think the book is the story of that.
So what's it like then? What was the election eve? How was the tension? I mean, what point, you know, in the run-up as you were campaigning, as you were going out, as you said, a very different time, no social media, no sound bites, no Number 10 press conferences like we're getting used to now. What was the run-in on the last week like?
Well, you see, 7 or 8 days before Election Day, one or two rogue polls came out. Polls we suspected, it may well be, were quite fake, but showed that Labour was getting up closer and closer to us, and within 2 or 3%. And that really got everybody very nervous indeed. And the funny thing is, just as it reached a climax, and we thought we were really in trouble and we managed to get things, the next poll came in that showed us well in the lead. And then the last 6-5 days was coasting through to a victory. So this was really how people get stressed. You know, I used to have maybe 2-3 hours sleep most nights. One night the weekend, I'd get a good night's sleep. And after a while, that accumulates, and you live on your nerves. it's a very odd way of life. I don't recommend it to everyone.
Indeed. So, what's the atmosphere like inside a political headquarters? Obviously, at your point, it was at number 10 during an election campaign. I mean, you said you didn't have enough sleep. You're perhaps fueled by a little too much champagne over the period. But what is it like to go through that night? Is it a case where as you go into the final phases, the adrenaline kicks in?
Yeah, the adrenaline kicks in. I mean, for maybe 2 months, I'd had very little sleep. The human body is a very odd thing because I was really exhausted at the end of the election. You know, I was thinking I should really go away for a month or something. Then she offered me a new job. I became Secretary of State in Trade and Industry. And suddenly I wasn't tired anymore. The adrenaline really kicked in and I started off again. So I think a lot of tiredness is mental as well as anything else.
And what was the mood like then when, you know, the results started to come in and the polls had been verified and you knew that you'd got it?
I must tell you, I did the first television broadcast when the results came in for the election. And we'd had a private poll and we were going to be in by 50 or 60 by then. And I went up to the BBC, the green room there, and everybody was in a very good mood. And they told me they thought it was going to be that we might lose. It would be a very close election, but it's touch and go. And I said nothing. And I sat on the television. We spoke for the first hour and they were talking up everything as if it was going to be maybe even a Labour victory. This was the turn. I slipped a note then to whoever was conducting at the moment, saying our private poll showed us this, and immediately they changed their tone, and then I never forget the first election, and they said, now if the Conservatives get 26,000 votes, then there's touch and go whether they get in. And we got nearly 30,000 votes, and it was clear saving for Melin. And at the end of my stint, a couple of hours later, I go into the green room, and it's like a morgue. It really is. And it's not that the BBC was left-wing or right-wing. It's just the great story had gone. The story would have been a close-fought election all night. Yeah.
What was Margaret Thatcher like? Did she sort of brush it off like there was never any possibility that she was going to lose this election? And did she just sort of sweep imperiously on?
Towards the end, she wasn't well. She had an abscess in a tooth. She had a temperature and she really was run down more than anything else. And I think she was really fearful that we may not win. And everything that she'd worked for would actually go. So she was really, she's a human being. She's like anybody else, you know. She was no iron lady. She was a very determined lady. She had great principles. And she believed she would not willingly do anything that wasn't morally right, just to be expedient. But you know, faced with the possibility of failure, she's like everybody else. But she came through and it was great.
When you look back at that 87 election, would you say that was perhaps one of the high marks of the Conservatives in the 20th century? Because as I said, you know, Margaret Thatcher left in 1990, and it's a very different style of conservatism then than to perhaps the current version that we've had. It's a very different world than it was back in 1987.
Yes, I mean Margaret won three elections. The second election, she beat the most left-wing manifesto we'd seen, probably the same as the Corbyn one, that same sort of manifesto. And we won by 140-something. And that was such a big victory that effectively it knocked extreme left-wing politics out in the UK, certainly even to this day. The third election, which is the one now, which was important about keeping enterprise going, to keep the idea of people working for themselves, building up new businesses. That we not only won that election, but two elections later, there was hardly any difference between the parties. Elections became more about personality than about politics. And even the election, which Corbyn was completely defeated, nearly 30 years later, it's still the same. This is inherently a middle-of-the-road type country. Now, the Conservative Party today is not so Thatcherite as it was in my day. It's begun to believe that government can do things. We were all completely convinced that government can't do anything. It's there to set the climate and to set the climate and let things grow, let people grow businesses. The government can't do it itself.
If you were to look back and say that was, if there was a legacy of Margaret Thatcher's period in office, a long period in office, you know, defined the 80s, yes. Would you say that is perhaps her legacy? The fact that, as you just said, you know, you empowered people to go out and set up their own enterprise.
Absolutely. And she gave the self-respect. You see, Margaret grew up over the shop. Her father kept a shop in Grantham, and she would hear over the dinner table every night exactly how the shop was going, what was selling, what wasn't selling. And she knew instinctively that the individual, the people who keep themselves, have pride in their family. And that's why she, for example, really pushed the sale of council houses. Because once somebody owns their own home, even though the mortgage company really owns it, but they own their own home, they have a stake in our society. And what we were trying to do and did was give as many people as possible a stake in their lives, in their society.
If there's a moment at this time, or any other time that you knew Lady Thatcher, that sort of summed her up, or, you know, a private reminisce, what would you say, what's the memory of working with her that you hold most dear and most fondly?
It's difficult because there are so many. But the one thing I knew about her, when I put something to her, a paper to her, an idea, whatever, I knew the answer before she said it, because she had a set of principles. And this is something which is quite rare. She had a set of principles, and I've only known her once ever depart from them. And that departing, I nearly resigned on the spot. It was in the early days. It was over the coal miners, and they put in a big wage claim, and a big thing, and she gave way. And I couldn't believe it. And I hadn't got up to the top then. I was way down somewhere. I nearly thought, this is it, I've gone. But 6 months later, they tried it again, and this time she wouldn't have it, and the strike started. In those intervening 6 months, she'd made sure that every power station in the country had a six-month supply of coal. In those days, they were all coal burning. She made all the arrangements to prepare for a strike and then let the strike happen when we were ready for it. And the result is we've seen. You know, it was a terrible strike, but it was the one point that changed the whole psyche of the UK. The coal miners wanted to carry, or the unions wanted the miners to carry on taking coal out the ground when it was no longer economic. And indeed, the sooner we got rid of coal-powered stations, the better. So I think that's it. So although she had principles, she knew when to duck and weave.
The book, what's it like, by the way, looking back at that now, you know, with down the periscope, if you like, or the telescope of history, so because we're coming up to, 40 years ago, which is, you know, makes me shake my head as well. What's it like revisiting?
Well, you know, the terrible thing is, for me, it doesn't seem that long ago, you see. That's the thing about life. Everything, you know, it's never a long way away. It's always fairly recent. But she's changed. She did change our country, and for the better. And what upset me a great deal, really, is when she passed away, you know, there were people saying, oh, I'll dance at her grave. And a sort of mythology grew up that she was heartless. Well, I wanted to publish this diary. Incidentally, I sat on it for 34 years before publishing it, because I wanted to show people that she is a human being. You know, she was very human, and she was, you know, concerned about her children, concerned about her husband, as well as being concerned about the great affairs of state.
The book is called Inside Thatcher's Last Election. It's by Lord David Young. It's coming out in the next few days, I believe, isn't it, Lord Young?
On Thursday, yes.
On Thursday. If people want to find out more information, do you have a website? Do you get involved? I mean, we're talking about very different times. And of course, 1987 is pre-internet, which obviously the younger listeners will be shaking their heads, wondering what on earth that world was like.
Yes, absolutely. We used to rely on newspapers and the radio. Have you heard of the radio?
Vaguely, but I don't think it'll ever catch on. The book is called Inside Thatcher's Last Election.
But I'll be tweeting about it anyway.
Where can we find you on Twitter?
The Lord Young.
The Lord Young. This book is called Inside Thatcher's Last Election. It's by Lord David Young. You can find him on The Lord Young, which I think is a marvellous Twitter name. Lord Young, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it. Thank you. Take care.